This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9.
Triple Bypass acknowledges that we broadcast from the lands of the Kulin Nation and pay our respects to the Wurundjeri people, whose land was never ceded. We pay our respects to elders past, present, future, and those that are emerging. And we acknowledge this always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Hey, babe, where's your boyfriend at?
You're listening to Joy 94.9 and you've just tuned in to Triple Bypass. This is the show where the bisexuals take over the airways. We're here for the bees, the peas, the polysexuals, the queers, and everyone else who wants to join in because we don't believe in exclusion. My name's Ruby.
I'm James.
And I'm Anthony.
It's great to be with you on another Tuesday evening. Now, we've got a great show tonight. We've got the spokesperson for Vixen Collective, Jane Green, a current sex worker, activist, and and who's also interested in neurodiversity, LGBT activism. We're going to be looking at the history of sex workers in the LGBTI community. We're having a world first release of some research that's been going on by the Vixen Collective, which is extremely exciting.
Amazing.
And so definitely stay tuned for that one. Also, they've picked some killer songs, so I'm excited for that too.
And a group that I know.
Yeah,
that doesn't often happen.
I know, Anthony. It's like
I feel like I'm in the know.
And the thing is, I also know this group. And what is this group? listen and find out. If you want to join in, you can message us on 0427-JOY-949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. How's your week been, gents?
Yes, it's been a big week. It's been an interesting week. I think a very exciting one because we have just recently learnt about a new website that's come out.
That's right, yeah. That's on our Buy News. So the new National Buy Org is going to launch in 1 week. And that is set up by one of our favourite academics in the world, Julia Taylor, who was the person behind the larger study of bisexual Australians, which was looking at 2,600 bi and pansexual Australians and trying to understand why there was consistently worse negative health outcomes, which was, we interviewed her
Over a year ago.
February 2017.
Very good, James. You were listening to the podcast.
I was doing some research for the show, and I found
You shouldn't tell us why. You should be like, no, I've just got it.
In researching the show, I found somebody's interviewed Julia before. That was us in 2017.
That's right. We did it. We got there first, as we usually do. And so, as part of the findings that are going to be coming out over the next few months, which Taylor says will highlight the extent of the problem, they're also going to be launching the first national organisation dedicated to improving mental health outcomes for bisexual plus people.
And if you haven't heard as well, the sort of things that we're talking about are bisexuals are more likely to have negative mental health outcomes like depression and things like that. More
particularly anxiety.
Anxiety, and more likely to have considered or attempted suicide. And
self-harming behaviours. Eating disorders, not the fun things.
Yeah, being subjected to intimate partner violence, lots of unpleasant stuff, and nobody really knows why, because at the moment nobody's done the research, nobody's put the resources in, and we're going to actually hopefully get some answers, which is going to be fantastic.
Now, of course, for crisis support and suicide prevention, please call 13 11 14 if you are at all feeling any of the things that we've just been discussing. And, of course, if you want to check out this website, which is going to be, and the organisation which is launching soon, you can find them at biplusaustralia.org. That's plus spelt out, not the little character.
Bi plus Australia, no hyphens or anything.
Just biplusaustralia.org.
Yes, and I've been loving sort of getting access to this website and having a look around because there's lots of information. There's an e-learning module for practitioners, which I'm really excited about because we have some horror stories about bi folk going to mental health practitioners trying to talk about not just sort of why we're there, but occasionally we might slip in the fact that we're bisexual, pansexual, multigender attracted,
and that's the source of all of our anxieties.
Some very interesting responses.
I actually think it's interesting. Our guest is coming up, Jane. We've spoken on a panel before, and we were at one point. I think we were both just kind of like, "Wow, there are so many crossovers with how mental health practitioners can pathologize sex workers and how they can pathologize bisexual people,"
right.
And that also could be a bit more of a crossover than people might have expected, which we'll find soon with the data that's coming up. I am so excited about data. That's what my life has become. That's what being an activist is. I'm just greedy for research. But these things aren't research. We've got Courtney Love about Bi Life is coming out really soon.
It's less theory, more practical.
Oh, it's so cute. I'm just really excited about it. It's like coming out on October 25th in the UK.
And field research. That's what it is. It's field research.
Field research.
Ethnography. Is that the word?
Something like that.
I heard that word once.
Good memory. Well, she revealed that she's hoping that the Bi Life will help increase visibility for bisexual people because, as Courtney has said and as we've talked about on the show, they're the largest but least represented in the LGBTQ plus community. Now, they don't. The I is not in the UK acronym because the intersex community there has not considered themselves to be part of the LGBT community. So apologies if I don't mean to erase intersex people. That's just how the UK intersex community has felt at the moment. But it's really cute. Like, you know, she discussed the difficulties that bi men and bi women have had. I mean, the genders are still a little binary, but given Courtney herself is gender fluid, I don't think that's going to be a huge issue on the show itself. And what I thought was really interesting as well was that she did say, you know, I know that a reality dating show on E+, none of those things necessarily instantly make you think of a responsible, heartfelt show about an important topic. But I made it clear that it had to be handled correctly, and they seemed to be very on board with that. But she also was saying, and I thought this was a really interesting point, that in 2018, a lot of young people are identifying as pansexual, but there's often not understanding of the people who have fought hard for their ability to be open about liking different genders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's premiering soon. It looks wonderful. There's a great mix of people. Everyone is really attractive. of course.
Because it's the TV.
But there's a mix of body types, ethnicities and backgrounds. There's an athlete, there's an influencer agent. I don't know what that is.
Sounds amazing.
A model.
It's an agent for influencers.
Obviously. So, like, they're the ultimate influencer, if they're influencing the influencers. I couldn't think about it too much. My head hurt.
So if my partner calls me manipulative, can I say I'm an influencer agent?
You could also say you're a fraud prevention officer. It's one of them is that too. And they're all there for different reasons. Some of them are just kind of starting a self-discovery journey. Some of them are really like confident in their bisexuality. Some of them are really nervous. It just, and the photo shoots were beautiful. They were wearing bi-colours and...
And I quite like the video of them just chucking pink, purple and blue paint and powder all over the place.
Wasn't it beautiful?
Nice.
It was gorgeous. Oh, and what's happening a bit sooner is the bisexual TV show is coming out on October the 11th, which is really soon.
Wow.
That's coming out on Stan. And so it was really interesting kind of reading more because I've been reading a lot of articles about this because I saw the trailer and I cried. It was just...
Okay.
It was so real. Like, oh. I'd never actually... Because, you know, we've talked about bi-representation, how we're seeing a few improvements. But this is a show that's about, you know, about discovering bisexuality and about the word itself because, you know, the woman who wrote it and created it and directed it was saying that, you know, she was always introduced as the bisexual filmmaker or the bisexual writer. And she said that even though she wasn't hiding her own bisexuality, it just felt deeply humiliating to hear it herself described that way. And she wanted to know why she felt that way about it. And so that was a lot of how the show came about. And so it's also interesting because she found that there was a thing about semantics, where I think a lot of people who would have identified as bisexual now identify as pansexual or queer. Instead of embracing the term, it feels elbowed out. And I really wanted to look at the discomfort with that term specifically because it means something very specific. Queer and pansexual are more umbrella terms. It implies that bisexual rules out trans and genderqueer people, which I don't think it does. I think those terms exist because there's still discomfort about bisexual.
Yes.
And, I thought that was just really interesting to kind of have that aired and to think that's the person who's made this show.
Yes.
It's like, because it's about a woman who has been in a relationship with a woman for a decade and they break up and then she realises she also likes men, but, you know, she's now dealing with her lesbian friends and who are saying things about bisexuality.
And from the summary that I read, it sounds like there's a fair bit of internalised biphobia that the character has to deal with as well.
Which is, honestly, but that's nice.
Yeah.
We don't actually get to see that. We don't get to see that. We haven't had a chance to actually see that struggle yet, I think.
Yeah, and by...
It feels like a watershed moment.
Well, there is a bit of internalised biphobia in... what was that? Ravenous? Is the show about the...
Insatiable.
Insatiable. And, like, some people felt it was badly handled. Some people thought it was actually pretty good.
Well, the writer's bisexual for that show.
So there were mixed feelings about that one.
It was the first season. My issues were around more about the woman wearing a fat suit. I understand.
The everything else, yeah.
Well, look, it's got another season. Maybe it'll get better. First seasons are always a bit hit and miss. I personally didn't watch it because I didn't have a great time at high school with eating disorders, so I just thought, I'll give that one a miss. I'm going to go watch Steven Universe for the 20th time.
Well, this show sounds like it brings together a combination of all sorts of complexities about the bi-identity and how it feels for you and how other people perceive it, and it feels more real than any other representation of bi that...
Ever.
Yeah.
And ever. The trailer looks really New Yorkly funny.
It does. It looks uncomfortable.
Like really, yeah, but sort of very deadpan.
Like Broad
and
City
sarcastic,
kind of a thing,
but,
yeah.
But genuinely funny.
I'm really excited for it. Anyway, that's coming out on the 11th, only on Stan. But now we do have to stop talking about television and get back to the radio. But stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be joined in studio by Jane Green, the spokesperson from the Vixen Collective. But first, we've got a few messages and then Patti LaBelle with Lady Marmalade. So stay tuned. Yay. You're listening to a bypass. This is Joy.
Hey.
Become a member today. You're listening to Joy 94.9. This is Triple Bypass, the show for all you multigender attracted folks out there, hosted by three fabulous bisexuals.
Pretty fabulous.
My name's Ruby.
I'm James.
I'm Anthony.
And what that was?
Oh, that was Lady Marmalade, the OG Lady Marmalade by Patti LaBelle. I'm always reminded when I hear that song of when at one of my family events, a sister's birthday, mm-hmm. we went to a karaoke place. And, yeah, my mum was, without knowing, she tried to karaoke that one and discovered mid-song just how rude the lyrics are.
I love that. It's
a great song to dance to.
It's so good. I enjoy the original a lot more. Like, I grew up, you know, when the Moulin Rouge version. And, like, don't get me wrong, I love Pink. I don't mind Christina. It's all good, and the video clip was wonderful. But I've heard this a few more times. I'm just like, yeah, that's soul. That's good stuff. And that was the first choice of Jane Green, who is our wonderful guest this evening. Jane Green is the spokesperson for Vixen Collective, a current sex worker activist and an activist in both LGBTIQA+ rights, neurotypical rights, bodily autonomy, and facilitating sex worker activism through social media. Thanks so much for joining us, Jane.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I thought we can get right down to basics. So Vixen Collective is Victoria's peer-only sex worker organisation. So it's run by and for sex workers.
Yeah, absolutely. So for anyone to participate at any level in any way, they have to be a current or former sex worker. Mm-hmm. We are a completely unfunded organisation, so we exist on the volunteer energy of members of our own community. And it's important for people to note that Victoria is the only state or territory in Australia that doesn't have a funded peer service. So we're really in a unique position in terms of working a lot to meet our community's needs, but our capacity restricts what we can do because we are an unfunded organisation.
Mm-hmm. I think working without funds is something that a lot of people in the community would hopefully be able to understand. And well, now, Jane, I've had the great pleasure of being able to talk to you about these about sex work and the LGBTIQA+ community before, because I suppose one of the things that I found surprising is that given the role that sex workers have played in queer history, that there is still this massive kind of attempt to separate and to say, oh no, they're not here, they're not part of us, they're not one of us, despite, you know, Stonewall and our own Mardi Gras often being, you know, sex workers were on the front lines in those places, and often for people who are trans and queer, that was where they were and how they knew each other and how they were forming communities and activism. And you mentioned before that Vixen Collective is not funded, and yet you've managed to produce just recently a pretty significant body of research. So this was just all done by volunteer and just motivation.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we've probably had a busier year this year than any year since I've been involved in Vixen. And I've been in Victoria for 6 years now, so that's saying something. But, I mean, some of it has been reacting to negative things that have occurred towards our community. A lot of people are aware, because it hit the media quite heavily, that the Liberal Party sought to pass a motion for sex work criminalisation, something called the Nordic model. And so we had a massive community response to that, and that actually led to the leader of the Victorian Liberals saying that they wouldn't adopt that or try to put it up in Parliament. And we've had a lot of other things going on. So we're constantly working, and we're constantly reacting to things that are occurring in our community. But yet the research I'm particularly proud of,
yes.
I think it's really important, because one of the things that we face as sex workers is people don't have a good understanding of what our work is like and who we are, and often listen to other people outside our community who talk about us. So I think having a clearer picture of what our community looks like is always helpful.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, nothing about us without us is vital for all levels of activism, because this idea that, you know, you can dictate what is best for people, it comes from that sense of moral policing, which I think the LGBTIQA+ communities especially should know better.
Yeah, if you don't engage in consultation with the people you're supposedly representing, there's always going to be assumptions, there's always going to be stereotypes, you're just never going to get to the truth.
Particularly, I think, because we grew up with a lot of very whorephobic media, like the way that we see those things portrayed often will mean that we have a lot of unprocessing to do, or deprocessing, or just processing in general, but So I would love to, can you give us some of the exciting research, please?
Yes, absolutely. So people have the context. This actually came out of a larger piece of research relating to outreach by religious organisations into sex industry venues. And we engaged in the research because there'd been some very negative behaviour by the Salvation Army in regard to sex workers, and a key Salvation Army member actually called for sex work criminalisation, and that made our community very angry. Mm-hmm. So we committed to a piece of research to look into that, but we always do a demographics component when we do research. And what we found, and we had quite a high level of participation in the research nationally, so the research does extend nationally, it's not just Victorian. What we found was that sex workers, 40% of sex workers identify as queer, that just under 28% of sex workers identify as bisexual, again, just under 28% of sex workers identify as heterosexual, and there was the remaining being made up by lesbian, gay, other, and people that didn't want to tell us. Mm-hmm. But it corresponds to research that's been done in Australia before, back in 1996 by Roberta Perkins, and it also corresponds to research that's occurred in the UK. So it's a consistent finding that there's this massive intersection of sex work community and LGBTIQA plus community.
Well, the majority, it sounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, and I think, if anything, could convince queer people that this is actually very much our issue, and issues around criminalisation are an issue for the LGBTIQA plus community. It's knowing that a lot of sex workers are in our community anyway. I think, so was that any of those findings surprise? So you were, I assume, across the research beforehand. So was that finding surprising, or was it, like, validating to know that, you know, things were still that way, or that it hadn't just been, like, one survey that had been misguided? How did it feel to kind of get those, to see the data?
Well, I mean, I think it's very validating for us to see what we already know about our community represented in that way. I mean, there's been other international research that's more of a qualitative nature on LGBTIQ sex workers in terms of the experiences mm-hmm. we have with police and treatment by government. But to see it actually put in those numbers in terms of the Australian context, I think, yeah, personally, I was like, yeah, that's where we are.
And so you identify as a queer person, so LGBTIQ rights have always been a part of your activism. When did your activism start? Because I remember you spoke at Slut Walk a few times.
I tend to get about the place doing some speaking, although I try and always be the backup speaker because I prefer to elevate the voices of other sex workers. But it's not always safe for people to speak in public and do face-out activism, so I do end up getting around the place and doing some speaking. Pretty much always been involved in activism. I think people sometimes only look at activism in terms of its formal sort of context, so doing public speaking, doing advocacy to government, doing training and so forth. But I mean, when I was younger, I lived on the streets. We used to have networks. We would share safety information with other people that were homeless, with other sex workers. I come from a country area in New Zealand, so being openly LGBTIQA+ was dangerous.
Yep.
For a lot of us. And so I think there's always those informal networks where we coordinate to look after ourselves as a community, and they need to be recognised, as well as more formal approaches to advocacy.
Well, that's where those formal approaches are born from.
Absolutely.
We don't all start in the boardroom.
And Jane, you said that you'd like to elevate the voices of other sex workers, and I know that you're very sought after for speaking roles, and that, and you've been at Joy a few times. And I'm just wondering, was there a sense that this research gave other sex workers a voice, like to get them an opportunity to share their experiences and to contribute to some very important research? Was that an area that sort of gave them a platform?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, look, I think it's one of the reasons that it's so important to consult with community and to take the results of that consultation and inform broader society. So much of what's said about sex workers is informed by stereotypes and stigma, particularly in media and film and television and also the arts. So I think it's critical. And Vixen, we work on a basis of consultation with our community. So we engage in an active and ongoing process of community consultation, and we commit to a minimum of 2 community-wide consultations a year, which is a big ask of an unfunded organisation. But unless we're hearing from members of our community about what their lives are like, what their work is like, what they need and what they want us to do as representatives for them, then we wouldn't be doing it right. And so it's an important thing for us to commit to.
And it's such a problem as well that one of the things that I see quite often on the internet especially is people who you know, self-identify as feminists, you know, the SWERF, essentially. Yes. The people who say that they have women's best interests at heart, but essentially have this, essentially, patriarchal, you know...
Dictatorship.
Yeah, exactly. Dictating to sex workers how they should live. And, yeah, I suppose that's part of why the consultation with people is so important, to say, you know, these people may claim to mean well, but, you know, you really got to talk to the people who are actually doing it.
Yeah, and look, this is this very unholy alliance, as I like to call it, between people that identify as feminists, particularly radical feminists, and the conservative, often religious right wing, where they often have very similar views, and I think that should be telling to people that they're in agreement.
But they're going to conferences together.
Yes, exactly.
They're speaking at each other's conferences.
And, I mean, they often view sex work, they say that sex work is inherently violent, and that sex work causes violence against women in society. And I see that as a very victim-blaming attitude. I've done a lot of speaking as a survivor of sexual assault, and I've been involved in law reform in terms of the rape sentencing guidelines in Victoria. And I think when you're speaking about people in that way, you are silencing them, and you're silencing your whole community. And if you cared about people's rights and if you cared about people's safety, you'd be listening.
Absolutely.
Totally.
Stay tuned. We've got more with Jane Green coming up after this song. This is Once Upon a Time by Mariah Lynn. Stay tuned. This is Triple Bypass. You're on Joy
94.9. More money. I want your money. I want more money. I want your money. More money, I want your money. I want more money, I want your money. Once upon a time, not long ago, I was a hoe. And I'm admitting it, I won't take it back. Cause I did this shit, I was a hoe. And I'm admitting it, I won't take it back. Cause I did this shit, I was a hoe. More money, I want your money. I want more money, I want your money. More money, I want your money. I want more money, I want your money.
I said, if I wanna fuck, I'm gon' fuck him. But if he ain't got a buck, I won't cuff him. Spend $100 on me, it ain't nothing. Wanted double D, so he stuffed him. Back to the point, is it some cash in this place? If it is, I probably stick the stats in your face. Turn around, then he asks about the taste. He fell in love like the passion of Drake. But I fuck him though, and I don't even care if his mother know. It's about that paper on another note. And I fake a baby like the rubber broke. And I, once upon a time, not long ago, I was a hoe. And I'm admitting it, I won't take it back. Cause I did this shit, I was a hoe. And I'm admitting it, I won't take it back. Cause I did this shit, I was a hoe. More money, I want your money. I want more money, I want your money. More money, I want your money. I want more money. This is for all my hoes. All my gold digging hoes. Money getting love, my hoes. About the riches on my hoes. Broke niggas don't do those. And I'm admitting it, I rip a nigga of his benefits. Send a flick, tennis strip, independent chick. Turn a bitch in the L in the generous. Yeah, contrary, I'm the blonde bomb scare. I'm rare on top, got a lot con near. True dime, Mulan, where I find my hair. If you ain't buying, get from down round here. D-O-double-L-A R-S, y'all motherfuckers gon' pay. D-O-double-L-A R-S, y'all motherfuckers gon' pay. Once upon a time, not long ago, I was a hoe. And I'm admitting it, I won't take it back. Cause I did this shit, I was a hoe. And I'm admitting it, I won't take it back. Cause I did this shit, I was a hoe. More money, I want your money. I want more money, I want your money. More money, I want your money. I want more money.
That's right. You're listening to Joy 94.9, and this is Triple Bypass. We're the show for the Bi Plus community, and that was Once Upon a Time by Mariah Lynn. That song was chosen by our guest today. I'm Ruby.
I'm James.
I'm Anthony.
And we're joined by Jane Green, the spokesperson for the Vixen Collective, Victoria's peer-only sex worker volunteer-run organisation that works on peer advocacy in the sex worker community. But Jane is also involved in a lot of other activism, including LGBTIQA plus rights and neurotypical rights, which two things I've held very dear to my heart. And we have bonded over before. We've been talking as about some really exciting research that's come out of the Vixen Collective. They've only released a few statistics so far. We can look forward to the rest of it being launched later in the by the end of the year, maybe?
Possibly early next year. I never like to over-anticipate when we'll do things because government has this weird, like, habit of, like, screwing things up for us.
Yeah, they're real good at that. Yep. But one of the studies we found was that more than 70% of sex workers in Australia identify as LGBTIQ, which is supporting research that's come out of Australia before and research that's come out of the UK. But I think, do you think that the LGBTIQA plus community would expect that? Is there often an assumption that queer work, sex workers are straight or that they're queer? Like, what are the assumptions people make?
Absolutely, I think the assumption is that sex workers are all straight cis women. And I've pretty much had that said to my face in LGBTIQA plus spaces. I've been involved in organising sex worker presence in events like Mardi Gras and Pride.
That's the thing. I mean, my primary experience of Vixen is these wonderful people in their bright red clothing marching. We seem to, the bisexual community always seems to get paired up quite,
I think that's
quite close.
That's a choice.
You know, I asked.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We wanted to be near the friends. So.
Yeah, so I'm just like, there was always this wonderful sea of red every time we do, when we do Pride March, yeah, which is great. I mean, and it's like, and I just sort of think if you're in Melbourne and you go to Pride, it's like you should probably recognise pretty easily that sex workers are definitely active in the rainbow community. Mm. It's like if you see that sea of red go past every year.
Yeah. And look, I find Pride, I won't say a completely welcoming space, but a much more welcoming space than others that I've experienced. Certainly, I was part of organising the sex worker float the last time there was a sex worker float in Mardi Gras, and that was in 2012. And the reason that sex workers don't march as a unit together, there are some places we'd march with other organisations, but we haven't marched since 2012 as sex workers that are unified because they tried to throw us out of Mardi Gras. And
hey, us too! High five!
Well, interestingly, in 2012, there are a number of groups they tried to throw out of Mardi Gras or groups they tried to censor the content of their signs and what their float was composed of. And it became such a big deal that we actually hosted a post-Mardi Gras community panel. And Scarlet Alliance hosted that, and Scarlet Alliance is the Australian Sex Workers Association. They're the national peak organisation for sex workers. And lots of different people spoke about their concerns with Mardi Gras. But the key thing that happened when they tried to suggest that we shouldn't be allowed to participate was they said, but you're all straight women.
Mm. How do you bounce back from something like that when we're fighting stigma and discrimination and all sorts of problematic issues and then, you know, there's this space where we, you know, assume that it's going to be safe and we can express ourselves and put a banner up and be visible and expect to feel safe and included, and then something like that happens. What impact does that have on the community?
Well, I think sex workers are tremendously resilient. Unfortunately, I think that's come as a consequence often of being used to being treated very badly, and we have to organise and fight back against that ourselves, often without a lot of allyship. And so when that particularly happened in terms of Mardi Gras, we were the people that brought together other community organisations and other groups that weren't sex workers to have a panel to talk about the issues that people had faced more broadly. And we're,
so you're trailblazing.
Yeah, and we're often in that position, but it's the position we're forced to be in. But it makes our community much stronger because we're used to responding and dealing with these issues.
What a lovely way to protest and unify, mobilise the community and come together.
It's lovely. I just wish you didn't have to do it.
Right, yeah. Totally,
you know,
totally.
I think, you know, bisexual people couldn't actually apply to be in the Mardi Gras committee until 2000. We were not included on the forms for that. And again, I think, Jane, you sent me some really great articles, including a great blog post that you wrote that I actually posted up on our Facebook page at Joy, Triple Bypass on Joy. Which I can, you know, that was written in 2012. And yeah, if you want to, I think that was, for me, a really good capture of just the frustration of having, like, you know, this community make assumptions about your sexuality and about your gender and, like, people who should know better, really. And I think that was a sense of that disappointment of, like, you should know better. Like, this is, I'm not angry or disappointed, but I'm also angry. I'm angry and disappointed. And so has there been consideration as to looking to march again, or is that just something that you think is no longer worth the energy and effort? Or,
well, I mean, look, I've been down in Victoria for 6 years now. I used to live in New South Wales, which was why I was up there organising. I don't think the opinion has changed. I mean, I know it was a bit of a watershed moment for us, given sex workers' presence as part of the 78ers and the first Mardi Gras and the protests around that. And I personally got a friend who's a sex worker who was arrested at the first Mardi Gras. So I think we reacted very strongly as a community. But I mean, it was interesting looking at the concerns of that were across all of the organisations in terms of corporatisation in those spaces, and I think that does apply to Pride these days. And
absolutely,
and there's certainly conversations that our community has on an ongoing basis about our presence in those spaces.
I think it's interesting because the discussion around corporatisation of our marches and our celebrations has become one that I think is getting picked up again. Like, there's a new wave of frustration. So, you know, the Victorian Midsummer Pride March, that got changed, you know, from having, you know, putting, I think, people, the police at the back and keeping corporations at the back rather than having them marching at the front. And so that was done through activism and through that sort of thing. But again, like, the effort it takes just to be like, this should be about us,
right,
not about companies that watch on the sidelines while we battle for our lives and then want to join the party as soon as it's thrown. But you mentioned as well, like, the with sex workers being there for Mardi Gras, but sex workers are, you also suggested this great book, Sex Workers Unite, A History of the Movement from Stonewall to Slut Walk. And so people often talk about Martha being the first person who threw a brick at Stonewall, but Sylvia Rivera is, I think, someone who's actually been documented as having done that, who was an 18-year-old transgender sex worker. And so what is it like to find these bits of history, to kind of have that reminder? Because I know for me it has been a hugely affirming thing in my sense of self and identity to read about BIPLUS history and to understand that, you know, often when history is told, like, you know, even the articles talk about, like, you know, the gays and lesbians who were there, and I'm like, well, I'm sure there were people who were bi and queer there too and trans people there, but we're not mentioned. And so finding those bits that actually say, no, you were here and we did matter and you have mattered and you still matter now. Has that been something that you find has helped with the community in general?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important for any community, but particularly for marginalised communities, to have a sense of our history and our shared history and the achievements as well as the negative things. I think it's often, I know personally, easier sometimes to focus on what's going wrong, and we do need to focus on what we've done right, and we have tremendous strength in community. We have to recognise that. But, I mean, something that frustrates me here in Victoria is that we don't have a good way of recording that history, because Vixen isn't funded. We do have an archive, but it's maintained by volunteers when we have time. Yeah. And I have the sense that sex worker history is slipping away piece by piece, and you can't really get it back. And often it's the most informal parts of our history. So the advocacy we do within our own community, the peer education we do, sex workers that I know that are artists, speeches that I know that have been given, and we lose those records, and that really it worries me.
Of course. History is how we form a sense of self and how we connect with each other.
Yeah, that sounds scary, doesn't it, when you feel like the momentum's sort of being lost in it. And you talked about being sort of unfunded and sort of relying on volunteers. How do you keep people motivated to sort of stay involved and sort of and continue largely unfunded?
Well, I mean, from a personal level, I tend to tell people that, like, I run on the fuel of anger.
Right. It's a thing, and it helps.
Yeah. But look, we motivate each other in a variety of ways, and we also, like, have to support each other and take time out and debrief. Otherwise, you just spend all your time being angry because there's so much that needs to be fixed. So we do a lot of events around providing social spaces and debriefing spaces and peer support for workers, so that we're not just stuck in that place of constant struggle.
The avoiding the burnout would be so important, I think, in that kind of work, because there would be constant sources of frustration.
And that sense of belonging, providing those spaces where you can speak freely and drop your shoulders and relax, and the nodding and knowing what each other's talking about, there's something really important and crucial about that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, when I was first working as a sex worker, the only people that knew I was a sex worker were other sex workers. I couldn't tell my family, I couldn't tell partners, I couldn't tell friends. I was going to university, I certainly couldn't tell people there. So that ability to talk to people that just fundamentally get it is so needed.
Oh, community is the stuff of life, as far as I'm concerned. But the next song we've got coming up is the one that Anthony's been very excited for.
I'll be dancing.
Wonderful. I'll watch and I may take photographs. We'll be right back after this break to talk a bit more with Jane Green. Particularly, I'm interested in hearing about neurodiversity and sex work. But this is Triple Bypass. If you want to get in touch, message us at 0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. We'll be right back after this break.
What's the matter with your life? Why you gotta mess with mine? Don't keep sweating what I do, cause I'm gonna be just fine. Check it out. If I wanna take a guy home with me tonight, it's none of your business. And if she wanna be a freaking, sell it on a weekend, it's none of your business. Now you shouldn't even get into who I'm giving skins to. It's none of your business. So don't try to change my mind. I tell you one more time. Think you are putting your cheek to sense in. Don't you got nothing to do? Then worry about my friends. Check it.
I can't do nothing, girl, without somebody bugging. I used to think that it was me, but now I see it wasn't. They told me to change and call me names, and so I popped one. Opinions are like assholes, and everybody's got one. I never poke my nose where I'm not supposed to. Believe me, if it's something that I want, I'm stepping closer. I'm not one for playing high pole like the Hasa Diddy 90210 type of hoe. I treat a man like he treats me. The difference between a hooker and a hoe ain't nothing but a feet. So hold your tongue tightly. Wish you could be like me. You're popping all that mess only to stress and to spite me. Now you could get with that or you could get with this, but I don't give a shit, cause really it's none of your business.
1993, S&P, packing and macking, bamboozling and smacking suckers with this track and throw the beat back in.
If I wanna take a guy home with me tonight, it's none of your business. And if she wanna be a freaking, sell it on a weekend, it's none of your business. Now you shouldn't even get into who I'm giving skins to. It's none of your business. So don't try to change my mind. I tell you one more time. It's none of your business.
How many rules am I to break before you understand that your double standards don't mean shit to me? I know exactly what you say when I turn and walk away, but that's okay, cause I don't let it get to me. Now every move I make, somebody's clocking. So ask me nothing, will you just leave me alone? Never mind who's the guy that I took home to bone.
Okay, Miss Thing never giving up skins. If you don't like him or his friends, what about that Benz? Your pet pet's got an ill rep with all that macaroni trap for rap. You better step, or better yet, get your head checked. Cause I refuse to be played like a Venus and trick deck of cards. No, I ain't hard like the bitches on a boulevard. My face ain't scarred and I don't dance in bars. You can call me a tramp if you want to, but I remember the punk who just humped and dumped you. Or you can front if you have to, but everybody gets horny just like you. So, yo, ho, check it, double deck it, on a regular butt naked. Pep's ass gets respected, miss, but it's none of your business.
If I wanna take a guy home with me tonight,
it's none of your business.
And if she wanna be a freaking, sell it on a weekend,
it's none of your business.
Now you shouldn't even get into who I'm giving skins to.
It's none of your business.
So don't try to change my mind, I tell you one more time.
It's none of your business.
So, the moral of this story is, who are you to judge? There's only one true judge, and that's God. So chill and let my father do his job.
The salt and pepper's got it swinging again. The salt and pepper's got it swinging again. The salt and pepper's got it swinging again.
That's right. This is Joy 94.9, and you have tuned into the very end of Triple Bypass, where the bisexual, pansexual, polysexual, queer, omnisexual, multigender, attracted, but everyone is welcome. Show. My name's Ruby.
I'm Anthony.
And I'm James.
We've been chatting with Anna, still chatting with Jane Green, who is the spokesperson for the Vixen Collective. If you've just tuned in now, which is the Victoria's peer-only sex worker organisation. We've been discussing some world-first research has been announced about the demographics of the Australian sex worker population, particularly those who identify as LGBTIQA+. It is significantly higher than a lot of people would expect. If you want to find out, you can grab the podcast, which will be out in about a week, which you can find at joy.org.au/triple bypass or on iTunes. You can also read some of Jane's work that I've been posting up on our Facebook, which is Triple Bypass on Joy.
And as always, you could always get involved with the show and you can text us in on
0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. You got 10 minutes before we go over to Jason.
And a special thank you to Joe for texting in. It was great to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, that was None of Your Business, Salt and Pepper. And so was that one of your choices?
That was definitely one of my choices.
I love it. I didn't grow up with that. I'm sorry, Anthony. But I really enjoy Salt and Pepper's just kind of bouncing way of speaking. I enjoy it a lot.
It's bouncy.
It's bouncy.
If you've seen the first Deadpool, there's a very good use of a Salt and Pepper song in that.
Their soundtracks are just great in general. But we've been discussing the history of sex workers in the LGBTIQA plus community. We've been discussing some issues that have been happening around Mardi Gras and Pride as far as sex worker accessibility. And we just got a message in that just says, woohoo, hi, hello. That was anonymous. There's no message. If you want to also text us in, 0427JOY949.
Woohoo to you.
Woohoo to you.
Feel free to add more detail in addition to a greeting. And the greeting is good.
Now Vixen Collective is the only peer sex work organisation in Australia that is completely unfunded, so it is all being run by volunteers. So what is the difference? So in other states where there is funding, does that funding come from government, from private sponsorship?
I'll just clarify, we are, Victoria is the only state or territory that doesn't have a funded peer sex worker organisation, but there are two other unfunded organisations. Oh. There is the organisation Swagger in South Australia. There is a funded peer service there as well, that's called SIN. But there's Swagger is another organisation there, and there's also SWEAR WA, which is Sex Work Education Advocacy and Research, I think. They renamed themselves recently, so that's why I'm a bit rusty. And they're an unfunded peer organisation in Western Australia, although there is, again, a funded peer service there. So we're not the only people without money. We're just in the worst place to be without money.
Yeah. Housing. So how with the funded organisations that exist, so where does the funding come from?
A variety of places. Often it's Department of Health funding that comes to fund supporting sex workers. Health. It's very difficult for any community organisation to get funding to do advocacy. I think it's a very hostile funding environment for everyone. But I mean, there's so much that needs to be worked on that we should be getting funding for a lot of different areas. And unfortunately, in Victoria, we're also in the position of government funding anti-sex work organisations that argue against sex worker rights. And the Andrews Labor government did give $340,000 to the most toxic anti-sex work organisation in the country in the last year. In 2017. So that was just, again, we're in a position where not only do we not have funding to build our capacity, but often the people who are getting the money are really people that shouldn't be.
Well, write to your MPs, because that's something that we can do about that. We've got an election coming up, so if this is something that you feel
they do tend to listen when there's an election.
They do. So, you know, if this is something that obviously does have a huge impact on our communities, and look, even if it didn't, it's the right thing to do.
Right.
We're looking at people's lives. We're looking at stability, and I suppose we've come a long way. I hope. And I saw the community, like the response to when the Liberal Party in Victoria came out and was like, "We're looking at this Nordic model," and there was a lot of anger. Not, I think, from people who are not sex workers as well. There's more of an understanding that criminalisation doesn't help anybody, particularly not sex workers. I mean, they do that, it protects people, when all it does is actually strip away all the like legitimacy and protections that come with legitimacy.
It's possible I live in an echo chamber. I probably do, to an extent. But I also saw, I don't know if you out there in Radioland have heard about Sesta Foster, which was, it's American legislation that has impacted sex workers all over the world, including in Australia. I have friends who've been personally impacted by it. Can you talk briefly about
that? Yeah, I can talk about that. So the Sesta Foster legislation from the US it's marketed or branded as being to fight online sex trafficking.
They're helping.
Sex trafficking and sex work are things that get conflated a lot.
They are conflated a lot. And unfortunately, the legislation is counterproductive in that it doesn't even serve that intended purpose, because if you want the police to be able to detect instances of trafficking, or even labour rights organisations detect instances of labour exploitation, then you need transparency in the sex industry. And the Foster Sesta legislation has had a number of impacts. People often assume that Backpage got shut down because of it. Backpage actually got shut down slightly earlier. But it's also shut down other online advertising mechanisms for sex workers, which reduces our income. It, it impacts on our safety. It impacts on our ability to network and share information.
I know a lot of sites that aren't sex worker specific but do have participation from sex workers have also introduced new policies to not allow sex workers to use their like Craigslist.
And absolutely. Sex work is illegal, from what I understand, except for in a few places.
Yeah, it's primarily it's yeah. it's criminalised in the US. But you're absolutely right. The foster sister legislation affected Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act in the US. And what that act used to do was provide a level of coverage for internet service providers and places like Twitter and Facebook and places like Craigslist, where if users posted content that was criminal in some way or defamatory, etc., etc., the ISP couldn't be held responsible. Now, the reason that that's affected sex workers, the change to Section 230, is that instead of thinking, okay, sex workers criminalised in the US, therefore it's going to make us unable to host that content, they've removed any reference to sex work, any reference to sex workers. So it's affected sex worker organisations. It's obviously affected individual sex workers in terms of their ability to advertise, but it's affected sex workers' ability to share information and interact as a community in those spaces as well. And that's really critical. I mean, it has affected sex workers outside the US. Here in Australia, we've seen the loss of low-cost advertising platforms, and that's really has a detrimental effect. It lowers sex workers' incomes. It makes their lives difficult.
And a lot of it, like we were saying, you know, with so many of these people are same-sex attracted or and a lot of them are bisexual as well. These are already people who are at risk of poorer outcomes as far as mental and physical well-being, and this just pushes them outside the system where they're even more at risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the thing we say again and again is the most marginalised are most impacted by these sorts of negative changes and policies and laws. And we've certainly seen that here as well. I mean, LGBTIQA plus sex workers who are people of colour, trans sex workers specifically, and sex workers who just fall outside the stereotypical sort of Western standards of beauty. So curvy sex workers.
Disabled sex workers.
Yeah, but absolutely. Disabled sex workers, sex workers that are alternative in terms of their presentation. So it's really impacted the people that least can afford to be impacted.
I think it's almost like a canary in the coal mine situation with that, because, you know, they're the ones that are on the margins of society are usually the first to go when a law is changed, but they're also the ones people are less likely to notice their disappearance. And I suppose that's what I get concerned about when I see similar creeping in. The fact that we're even talking about criminalising sex work in Victoria is itself a warning sign, I would say.
Well, it's also just absolutely ridiculous. You can no more criminalise sex work and expect it to go away than you could criminalise sex and expect it to go away. You're just going to make the conditions under which it occur very negative.
Yeah, and look, we are having to wrap up soon, but I did want to really jump in at things. So you were also diagnosed as autistic as an adult. Can I ask, so people probably would not think of sex work as an autistic-friendly job, but you were just saying how it's actually perfect. Can you just tell me why?
I find it really good. I've done other jobs. I used to be an accountant, and God, that was a terrible job. Someone saved me from that. but I find sex work really good for my mental health. I find it fits really well. It allows me to manage my time and manage my exposure to various situations. And also, I think just in terms of sex workers that I know with a variety of types of neurodiversity, we can pick and choose when we work to not 100% of the time, because obviously we have to turn up and make money, but we have a much greater flexibility than I think people in other occupations do, and I find that personally very helpful in life.
We just get a message in. Great show, great guest, learned a lot. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
We are going to have to wrap up there. Coming up next is Jason with Local Roots.
They're going to be chatting with Samsara, who's a 20-year-old Melbourne singer-songwriter who, at the age of 19, had the number one most played song on Triple J at one point last year, which is just ridiculous.
Wow. Tune in for that.
Well done, Samsara.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, stay tuned. Don't touch that dial, but if you want to catch up on what we've been talking about with Jane Green around Vixen Collective and sex work activism in Victoria, internationally and in the United States, grab the podcast when it comes out at joy.org.au/triplebypass. And if people want to find out more about Vixen Collective, where can they go?
Absolutely. Follow us on Twitter. Mm-hmm. We are at Vixen Collective. We're very easy to find. Check out our website. It's vixencollective.net. And please support us. We need allies. And people should support the human rights of all other human beings. It's not a hard ask.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thank you so much. Stay tuned. This is Triple Bypass. We'll be back next week. You're on Joy.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.